Hello there, folks. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Adam Karenina Sharif, and this is the latest episode of In the Orbit Of, the interview podcast from the Eisner Award-winning Orbital Comics. This episode, we're going to be in the orbit of Gargantuan with series writer Colleen Douglas. Colleen is a comic book writer as well as being the editor-in-chief of Amigo Comics. I started off by asking Colleen about how she first got interested in comics.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. Thank you for coming in to join us here at Orbital to talk a little bit about your career as a comic book writer.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm very happy to be here.
Excellent. So you've got a book coming up.
Yes, I do.
With Amigo.
Yes, I do. Amigo Comics.
Called Gargantuan.
Yes.
But before we get to Gargantuan, let's talk a bit about where you've come from and what you've done before.
Yes.
So,
well,
how did you get your start in comics?
Originally, I got my start because I had been reading comics for a very long time, because that's how most people start off. I'm a fan of Judge Dredd, and for me, I think I liked him best as one of my favorite characters in comics, because he has consequences, and I think up until then, there really weren't that many comic book heroes that had any sort of consequence that they had to deal with. You know, he was more like a naturalistic character in that whatever action he took had a reaction, even if it was later. For example, Apocalypse War.
Yep.
So,
and I guess the thing is, Dredd applies his kind of moral and legal code to its full extent.
Exactly.
Like, he doesn't really compromise.
That's true.
And that's why, I think you're right, that's why the stories have so much weight, because then there's a consequence to him being that way.
That's right.
Where maybe a superhero would say, oh, I'm not gonna hurt this person.
Yes,
you
exactly.
You know, whereas Dredd will kind of just follow through.
That's true. The other side of it is that a superhero, like, say, for example, Superman, would go and save the day, and it doesn't matter if the city's destroyed while he was doing that, you know?
There's also that.
But in Dredd's case, of course, if you destroy something or you destroy a bunch of people, there's a good possibility there may be retribution.
Yeah.
So
okay.
I think that appealed to me as a reader.
So more of a more of a harder edge sci-fi than a superhero reader.
No, actually I do read superheroes too, but I only read one superhero, because that's the ultimate superhero for me.
Which
the
is
Marvel. Silver Surfer.
Oh, okay.
He's the one.
He's the one.
He's the one, the dude on the surfboard.
Why the surfer?
Well, because he has unimaginable power, and, I mean, yes, power cosmic. You really couldn't get better than that.
Yeah.
But he still applies a rule with it. You know, he still has that side of him whereby he thinks about the consequences, and, you know, or he puts the lesser individual first. You know, it's not just, you know, I'm here, I'm all powerful, and blah, blah. He sort of thinks about things as well.
He's got quite a strict sense of honour as
well. Yes, precisely.
Right? Like, and especially when he was, you know, serving Galactus, he would do his duties. And that was how it worked.
Yes.
So that's the kind of stuff that got you interested in comics.
That's the kind of stuff that got me interested in comics. And then on the other side of it, of course, we have the Cimmerian. And I started reading him, his first one from 1970, the very first Conan that came out, which of course was super. And
so the Marvel stuff, the Marvel 70s comics?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, to be fair, I read Conan more for Marvel than I did for any other.
Yeah.
And of course, Surfer was, you know, special.
Of course.
But that's kind of like my three main sort of characters. That,
okay.
I know it's very unusual, and I don't read particularly girly books. So.
Well, I don't. Yeah, I mean, I definitely don't have those kinds of expectations at all, but I think they're interesting and slightly disparate influences.
Yes, absolutely.
But clearly that's informed who you are as a writer.
Yes, to some degree.
So when you started getting into writing comics, how did that come about?
Well, I first started to write like short stories, which I would turn into comics. And
So short prose?
Yes.
Gotcha.
So basically, you know, like a 2000 AD future shock, start, middle and end kind of thing. And it just sort of grew from there. And when I started to really take comics more seriously, then of course it was about developing the character, the plot, deciding what would be the driving force in it, whether it would be a sense of honor, duty, or it would just be something completely different. And I found that I tend to write the middle book in my comics, in that there's always a history and there's always a future.
But we're seeing a middle passage.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So you always get sort of a middle glimpse with that. Except perhaps maybe in the book that's coming up next, which is Gargantuan, because that already has its own past written to it. But essentially, I've written it with the idea that there will be a future.
Oh, that's interesting. So, and I think that that's kind of true as well of Titan, which is your series that you've had with Amigo. It's now in a graphic novel?
Yes, it's a graphic novel now. It's coming out on the 29th of May. And it's the same day as the Gargantuan's series will start. Right. So they'll both be around.
Double whammy.
Yes. But yeah, it's Titan is a similar sort of thing in that she does have a history.
Yeah, I got the sense from the... Because it was it four or five issues collected?
It was four issues collected.
Yeah, even from the first, you get an idea that there is like a pre-existing world and a setup and structure and a history to this thing. But we don't necessarily have to walk through it from the beginning.
No.
Which I enjoy because I'm not heavy on comics that are very, like, exposition. Like, I'm going to tell you everything you need to know and then the story. I like things that kind of just drop you in and say, the world's there, you'll figure it out. Which I felt like was kind of what you were doing in the first couple of issues of because, Titan.
Well, what I tried to do with Titan is to give a flashback. So you get to understand the natures of the old gods, as it were. And to get an idea of, you know, what they hold as principle for them. And basically, there's very little that they hold as principle. They only have one rule, and that is none shall be greater than another, which is basically we are all going to be on the same balance when it comes to it. You know, you will not get a higher benefit than I will. There's always a fair exchange. There's always something given and something taken, so to speak.
Which is quite a moral objectivist kind of idea,
Yes, entirely.
Yeah, I got a sense, because you just mentioned that you kind of think about what you want to do thematically when you approach a project.
Yes.
And Titan seems to really balance between, like, looking at, like, the real consequences of, like, science, but also fantasy and mythology and things that you can't quite... are less tangible.
Yes, that's
and the,
right.
And the kind of tension between them.
Yes.
So that's something you kind of explore in the book.
Yes. It's a bit of a test, really, to see how you could really pit your nature against, you know, you can have a scientific condition, which is, say, for example, Titan and the way she was born and the way she was brought up.
Yeah.
But you cannot necessarily control her nature beyond that, in that what is in her is going to be the thing that will rule her in the end.
Which is that thing of, like, are we or are they a rational animal, or is it something beyond, something that we don't necessarily have as much agency with? Which is an exciting thing to kind of explore, I think. Yes. And something that maybe comics can do really well.
Yes, I like it because comics is the perfect vehicle for that.
Yeah, because of the visual, right?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. I want to get the name right, but it's Andre Stahlschmidt. Stahlschmidt.
Yes.
Who illustrated Titan.
That's right.
And it was coloured by Wesley Manuel.
Yes.
I thought the colour palettes were really interesting.
Yes, Wesley is... he's probably going to roll his eyes if he ever hears this. He's very fond of green. So there was a moment when Andre and I were teasing him and saying, this is now our green book or our blue book or whatever it may be. But I think that Wesley was very smart with the colours. He actually applied it in a way that gave nuances beyond what was being said at the time. And I really love that about it. It was a very, very structural way of conveying emotions to the reader without having to sort of, I don't know, spell it all out.
Yeah, I think it does some really great kind of almost, not invisible because you can see it because it's coloured, but kind of, as you say, structural stuff to communicate the story. Because the kind of base palette is very sort of beige and black and quite neutral. And then the pages with the action sequences and the kind of different splash pages and so on, when the colours then pop into the bright greens or the pinks or the kind of neon hues and so on.
Yes, that's right.
It has a function.
Yes.
You know, which is always nice to
tell
see.
It's to tell you that something is absolutely happening.
Yes. And it will remind you of something you saw earlier because, you know, symbolism and motifs.
That's it.
Which is always nice when you get a sense of a creative team kind of like working in harmony to tell the thing and not just kind of piece by piece by piece.
Yes.
What's your collaborative process like?
Or
what was it like on Titan?
With regard to Titan, Andre and I worked very closely together because, of course, he's based in Brazil. And Wesley is as well. Andre is in Curitiba and Wesley is in São Paulo. And so we would sort of try to speak to each other on Facebook, or we had WhatsApp.
So you've got a group.
That was a useful tool.
The group chat.
Yep, that's it. So, you know, we could sort of figure out, you know, how is this scene going to work and, you know, what kind of colours we think might go very well with that. But then ultimately we'd leave the colouring to Wesley because really that was his job.
Mm-hmm.
And but Andre would put sort of little sideline notes in there as well, based on, you know, what my thoughts were at the time and how I wanted to have something interpreted. So, you know, like, for example, the page with Asera Vashi, speaking to Dawn, I felt it was really an important thing to have Cronos present, you know, and he's sort of wrapped around her
both
chair.
Both, like, literally and symbolically.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Gotcha. So, you know, because it's he really does signify time as well for her.
Yeah.
So, to have him present in that moment, you're always understanding that there's more than one element at any given moment that's happening in this story, especially with the Mother of Monsters, because
which is also reminding me of the idea you mentioned of kind of always being in the middle of the thing.
Yes,
like you're always in the now, but there is a past and there is a future.
That's right.
But you're framed with what's in front of you.
Yes, exactly.
And with Cronos literally being there.
Yes,
that's, you know, really driving it home. Before we move on to talk a little bit about the upcoming Gargantuan, I did want to ask you about, there's a scene in which Titan shaves her head.
Yes.
Where's that coming from for you? And is there kind of like a symbolism or meaning to that particular gesture for you?
Yes. Well, I think that was the first sort of impetus in the change that was going to be coming forward.
Yeah.
Because she was no longer... It's almost like a separation from her past life and the life that she's going to be leading in future.
Yeah.
So in a way, she kind of... It was a way of sort of cutting off that
sheds that layer.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. I think that's... I thought that was particularly powerful, and it made me think a lot about how we're starting to see more narratives, particularly with black characters in media, you know, whether it's kind of like shaving their head for the first time or, you know, wearing their natural hair and that kind of thing, and that moment of transition, that moment of like affirming your identity in a different way than what you came to the table with.
That's right.
And that's what it brought up for me, and I thought it was really powerful, actually.
Yes, yeah. That's the idea, because she's, of course, going to become something entirely
something different.
Yes.
And it's, I guess it's that moment of self affirmation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought it was really powerful.
But in her case, it was a bit unconscious at that point, but certainly
of
it's
course.
There.
But, you know, in retrospect,
Yes, it's there.
Which I think is often the way, right, when you make sort of, not catastrophic, but you make sudden changes in your life, it's often only later that you can unpack
Absolutely.
Exactly what you were doing.
At that pivotal moment, this was the time when I changed.
Yeah.
Yes,
but at the time, you probably didn't know.
No,
you're just doing something radical.
No, it was in the moment of whatever it may be.
Yeah.
That's right. That's true.
That's really great. Talking about Gargantuan, which is upcoming, also from Amigo, what's the scope of it as a series? What's the kind of elevator pitch? What's the...
Well, the scope of it really as a series is that Juan Elterez, who is the creator behind Gargantuan, first, when he first created the Zero issue, he wanted to create a big monster sort of comic that was his ode to Godzilla because he's a
right,
fan.
So like 50s horror.
He's a super fan of Godzilla. He has gotcha. The t-shirt and everything.
Okay.
You know. So I think he always wanted to have his own sort of monster story,
yeah.
as it were.
Okay.
But the vehicle for that, he decided that he was going to create these sort of ginormous beings who came to Earth and, you know, had caused the Earthlings to sort of devolve.
Right, okay.
But the rest of the story, he sort of was like, oh, I don't know. And then, you know, it turns out that the heroine, mm-hmm. who is Sarah Lozen, is, you know, a, sort of a survivor of a madman, Creus, who is connected to her.
Right.
Through the Gargantuan, and he's really responsible for an apocalypse in in California.
Gotcha.
You know, I hope the Californians won't be too offended, but basically it was destroying California.
Okay.
And so I said, well, okay, you could have that, but then after you've had all the rah 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 and the mashing up and breaking everything,
yeah,
what's next?
What's the story after that?
You see,
mm-hmm.
because you need to have something. A driving force beneath that.
Mm-hmm.
So Juan said to me, okay, I leave it to you. You can do what you want
yeah.
with this story. So I decided to not just make it a great big monster mashup, although it is a monster mashup.
Okay.
It does have that element. I wanted that it should also have a smart sense of a future.
Okay.
So I didn't just put it that these big biomachines came and infected the planet and devolved the humans and turned them into hominid. I also made it so that the hominids have the possibility for a future.
Okay.
Because the future is hominid. It's inevitable.
Right.
Everybody on the planet will change.
Mm.
But the idea behind it was that there would be a few select individuals who carry an ancestral gene that matches the original aliens, because
right,
of course
okay.
they could not undo the devolution that they had
mm-hmm.
done. So the thing that they chose to do was to put it in the DNA, so that that way there would be a few hominids who could actually lead the rest.
Right.
So
that's,
I wanted to make it's not quite, you know, I didn't want to do another zombie Walking Dead,
yeah,
whatever.
Sure.
I
yeah.
wanted that these particular primatoids could actually think.
Right. There's just like a small sense of Planet of the Apes to it.
Yes, there certainly is.
You know, like humans being devolved.
That's
but
right.
Some of them maybe still have a sense of intelligence, you know.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Okay.
But the other thing that I wanted to do with Gargantuan was also to show the two sides of these alien beings. Because Sarah Lozen, being the heroine, actually Lozen was a real heroine. She was a real Chiricahua Apache.
Oh.
She fought with Geronimo.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
So she really does exist.
Oh, okay.
So
that's
when
cool.
we named this character, it was on purpose.
Right. There's a function
yes.
to that.
Yes.
And when is it set?
It's set in modern day. It's set in
present,
modern day.
Yeah.
It's set in present time.
Okay.
But what I wanted to get out of it was that you have both good and bad in everything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's really what you do with it that dictates your future. Because with the Gargantuans, in Creus's case, he believes that, he believes in colonization, in
right.
the power of colonization. His argument is that if you are more superior to the other existing beings there, then it's natural that
you should rule. Subjugate them. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
And Sarah's point of view is that, that subjugation is only applicable when people aren't evolving, but they've moved beyond that. So your rules will not apply to them. So this is the thing about that. They're now going on into sort of an uncertain future.
Mm.
But they have some structure, some
okay.
ideas in place that would actually take them forward.
It sounds like you're taking a very unusual track to explore the ethics and ideas around both evolution and, colonialism.
Yes.
Which, to get to the themes of what you're doing.
I like people to have a bit of a think.
Yeah, okay.
Which is good for them, sometimes in comics.
And also, to I suppose it echoes a little bit the objectivist stuff in Titan of, if you say there's good and bad, but it's the actions, it's the choices that are defined. It's not the intentions, it's not the ideas, it's what's actually enacted by these people or whoever.
Yes, completely the case.
Which I think is really interesting. And of course, I think we get a lot of contemporary media that asks us to sympathise with characters because we know that they mean well. They're trying to do the right thing. But we're not, but whether we judge them for their actual actions or not is a different question.
Yes,
so I think that's also equally interesting to explore.
I think for me, when I have a character, I never really make them black and white.
Mm.
They're always shades of grey.
Yeah.
Because I believe that people are shades of grey.
Mm.
None of us are any one thing.
Yeah.
So
nobody's a monolith.
No, well, it'd be terribly boring if they were.
And who's the creative team joining you on Gargantuan?
The creative team on Gargantuan is myself, Louis Cezanowski, who did some work with Juan before for IDW.
Oh, cool.
They did a comic called CVO.
Yeah.
I think. And Lewis also did the work on Ghost Wolf, which is Juan Alturas's sort of ode to Conan and barbarian style.
Was that Amigo?
That's Amigo.
Yeah, okay. Gotcha.
And he's done a number of other things as well for Zine Scope, and he's also done, I think it's Edgar Allan Poe for Dwight L. McPherson. That's it.
Okay.
Yes. So he's done all of that. Renato Stevanato is the chap doing the colors. Cool. Renato is the one who's just worked on Massimo Rossi's Cold Blood Samurai, which is out with Action Lab.
The
Salamander, the Gaijin Salamander, which is set in the Edo period. It's quite fun.
Cool.
Of course, I always have my faithful letterist because he's a super letterist.
And who's that?
Ferran Delgado.
Oh, cool.
And Ferran right now is celebrating because, of course, we published a book called Sky Masters of the Space Force through Amigo, and that's nominated to the Eisners.
Oh,
so Amigo's in the Eisners this
congratulations.
Year.
Congratulations. That's fantastic.
We're all very happy
that's
for
great.
Him. And happy that we were able to help.
Yeah, well, fingers crossed that, you get to, get to take one home. So Gargantuan's going to be how many issues?
Is it Gargantuan, well, I've written 4 issues for it, along with one's 0 issue, so it'll be 5.
Okay.
Yeah.
And have you got plans on the horizon after that, or are we sort of wait and see?
Well, I never get to have any rest, so my next work will be Apocalypse Girl, which is a second comic that...
a second series of it, right?
Yes, Juan has asked me to write a series 2 for his series 1, which he did, I think it was last year. I think it's 2017.
Okay.
He did that in 2018, so sort of 2017, 2018.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm now writing a season 2 for it, which I have done, and it's been drawn and it's getting coloured and so on. Ramiro Barallo is the same artist that created it with Juan that is continuing the work on it.
Mm-hmm.
And Bruna Costa is a new girl from Sao Paulo who's colouring and she's beautiful at it.
Cool.
We're sort of doing that because essentially Juan decided that he didn't want to write Apocalypse Girl anymore because he's a man and he knows nothing about a 16-year-old girl. And he thinks that somehow I would be better suited for that.
Well, that seems like it's a good call.
So we're taking it. We're taking the bull by the horns, and we're doing something great with her.
That's really good. I do believe in. I think we're seeing an increase or an uptick in kind of authentic voices getting to do stories that they, can connect with in different ways, or ways that they may have experienced.
Yes. Which... Well, a teen girl with the ability to bring the world, the apocalypse, has got
sure
problems,
you lived through that.
Well, perhaps not that bit, but I've lived through the dating bits and the awkward bits, and so I completely understand her.
Oh, that's exciting. So that's Apocalypse Girl.
Yes.
That'll be next year?
That will be in September this year.
Oh, right.
She comes out in September. Gotcha. So that keeps me
sort of busy.
Yeah. The work for next year will be Carmine, which is a very, very dark and very unusual sort of piece that I always wanted to write.
Okay.
Because I've always wanted to write something on an antediluvian race.
Oh.
And they are this sort of antediluvians who live in modern day, they are not vampires or any of that stuff. I sort of keep away from that trope. But they do have what's known as seals, and these are the things that give them the longevity, as well as it gives them their own sort of special ability, if you like. And Carmine, she's going to be the future queen in a house called Cochineal. And her seal is the lightning beast.
Okay.
So it's going to get very interesting.
There's some dynasty stuff going on
there. There's going to be some dynasty stuff and people chopping people's heads off.
Okay.
I'm not certain if that was in dynasty, but...
No. It's in this dynasty, but...
Yes.
Fantastic. So we look forward to Gargantuan number zero.
Yes, the zero issue and the first issue will be out at the same time.
Oh, okay.
So they will be out on the 29th of May.
Okay. Yeah. And Titan is available now?
Titan will be available also on the 29th as a trade paperback in English.
Right. And you've also got it in Spanish.
Yes, I've got it in Spanish. Unfortunately, it's sold out.
Well, I mean, that's good.
In Spanish. It's very good news, but when you go there on Karis's website, there'll
Spanish readers or listeners that we may have, have to settle for the English one.
Sorry, I apologize in advance. But if you are in Seville, there is a comic book shop called Nostromo. You would be able to get it from them.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's great. Excellent. Well... thank you so much for joining us, Colleen. It's been really interesting to talk to you.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no problem at all. Look forward to the trade of Titan and Gargantuan 0 and 1 coming up soon.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks ever so much for tuning in. That was the latest episode of In the Orbit Of. If you'd like to find out more about Orbital's podcast, you can head to orbitalcomics.com, and on social media, our handles are @orbitalcomics. Thanks very much. Take care and be sweet.